This is episode one of Resource Cast. I'm sitting here with Lucas von Vieren, my co-host for probably most of these episodes. And today we are just doing a quick introduction for the interview we did with Tessa Kleinfeld, who's coming up. She's the owner of the Resource Facebook group and her own design studio, Frolic, with a K.co.za. It's a mostly packaging and branding design studio. And I had a good chat with her. As the first episode of the podcast, I think I learned a lot immediately. Firstly, in terms of just the interview, I've done quite a few interviews before, but I think I was taking it quite seriously because it's the first episode, because we're working with Tessa on the podcast. So I was maybe going into radio show host a little bit too much, and maybe was a little bit unnatural right at the beginning, but I do think we got into a cool groove afterwards.
But that's the cool thing about this format, is that you have to give it more time.
Yeah. So
everybody will be stiff in the beginning. If you look at most podcasts, the cool stuff usually comes out around about hour and a half in.
Jeez.
Into these things.
Yeah.
But this is more, it's more about trying to get the personality out, I suppose. And Tessa is a personality.
Yeah.
What a fantastic project to start off and then see the success of it. I was particularly impressed with the numbers.
Yeah.
That you guys were talking about.
Yeah, 15,000 followers in a Facebook group just for creative freelancers who have a tertiary qualification of some kind.
Yeah. No, it
must be a significant portion of it.
And
overall,
the thing is, I people talk about it. I've been told to go to join the resource because either freelancers are there, and they said the jobs are coming up there. So it's word of mouth is helping it on. But there was another thing was that she's curating it. It's not just anybody.
Yeah.
It's not a career junction. It's not a career. Mm. It's literally
a
network of quality people.
Yeah.
You
absolutely.
Know? So in that, you can see she's got a vision for it.
Mm.
She's not being horrible about it or trying to be like elitist about it. Just like, no, this needs to be a place of quality. I can't think of another word except for, because like the people that have told me about it, these are like quality writers, fantastic, like creative directors.
Yeah. Because you lose the clients if it's just 1,000 people commenting saying, give me the job,
yeah.
You know, who don't necessarily have a portfolio or anything, then it won't survive.
Yeah.
So it does require that. Although what's interesting, I think, is that her following has grown very organically. And one of the things we get into in the interview is that she just started something. She just thought the need was there. She started it. I mean, it was even called The Resource based on a suggestion from a friend rather than a planned whole strategy session and what's the best name and can we get the URL? She just went with it.
Yeah.
And I think she's actually now getting to the point where she's working on the next steps and what is the next strategy with the resource and how can she take it further. But I think for the first part of its life, it was more or less just something that she was passionate about as a hobby, which for me, I find amazing, because I can't think about anything without thinking, you know, quite a few years down the line, is like, where is it going to go? And what are the different branches it could go down?
Yeah. And I think that's the challenge in most passion projects and in the world of, if you take a think about, if this was on LinkedIn, how do you monetize this?
Yeah.
There's
no hobbies anymore. Yeah.
Everything needs to be monetized. Because if it is a passion, yes, I do think, how do you find a way of making a living out of it?
Sure.
And at the moment, this just seems to be filling a need versus being monetized or taking a percentage or a placement or any of those things. So I take my hat off to her. And I think the lesson that I do also take out of it is just do it. Just do it. Figure it out along the way. If it isn't working, kill it. But it's something's here. Something there. She's the seeds are there and it's growing.
Yeah. So I think that's enough upfront for anyone listening. I think that you will find a lot of good nuggets in this conversation that we had. Apologies right up front for halfway through the interview. I live next to Claremont High School, and the school was having either some kind of open day or a sports day or something like that. And they started doing war chants about halfway through the interview. So we had to cut a couple of times. And eventually we just kind of had this background track of crazy chanting, but it doesn't interfere with the interview. I think it's still great content. She talks about the resource itself, its structure and what she's trying to get out of it. How to grow an audience from 0 to 15,000 in the last 5 years. She talks about her own little design company. She shares some great tips and tricks and apps for becoming more effective and efficient in running your freelance business. And I think especially from the perspective of if you're a solopreneur, if you have a company, as it were, but you're not selling yourself as a freelancer, you're selling yourself as a company, but it's just you. That's what she does. And I think that'll be quite interesting for designers in that realm. So without further ado, we bring you Tessa Kleinfeld. My guest today is Tessa Kleinfeld. Tessa is the founder of The Resource. She's also a designer with her own company called Frolic. She's got 14 years of experience in the industry, and on her Facebook profile, she self-describes as a packaging designer, world traveler, nature lover, cat mother, and amateur whiskey swigger. Tessa, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
As you heard from the introduction, I'm producing The Resource Cast in collaboration with Tessa and The Resource. For those who don't know, can you describe The Resource to us?
Sure. In a nutshell, The Resource is a face group which acts as a job board for the South African advertising, media, film, and PR industries. So just a place where employers can connect with potential staff or otherwise clients with freelancers.
Right. And there's quite a lot of interaction on the boards. Today you told me that you've now reached 15,000 members.
Yes. Yes, I have. Yes, I like a nice round number. 14 felt weird.
Exactly. Yeah. Good. As we were saying, you're kind of a small Instagram influencer now. Yeah. One of the photographers, 15K seems to be this kind of industry standard for now you can start partnering with brands in a bigger way. Because obviously, I mean, I've done work for Markham where they're working with influencers who have followers, micro influencers, nano influencers who have 1,000 to 2,000 followers. But 15K that's decent. And you get a much higher engagement rate with The Resource than any photographer does.
Yeah, although I do hate thinking of myself as an influencer.
No, yeah, of course.
I'd like to create influencers through the platform. We'll see. Maybe some people float to the top that tend to be natural influencers that can, you know, drive some positive change in the industry, perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah, leaders within the group.
Yes.
But I mean, that's quite interesting because The Resource has been much more about The Resource than it has been about you. I mean, you post as yourself on The Resource, you are the mod, you comment on things and you get engaged, but I've never seen you self-promote, I've never seen you self-aggrandize in any way, you're just there to facilitate the forum. So did you choose to do that, or is it just like a natural part of your identity, the way that you handle things?
Yeah, I don't really like to put myself on a platform. I don't really particularly like attention. I always get sweaty palms when people ask me to talk at little panel discussions and things. Yes, I do. So I really just try and be like Switzerland. Like I'm the guy that makes sure that everything stays on track. So I just really like to be in the background. And a lot of people do know me, obviously, because I'm very active on the group and they've gotten to know who I am. But I try not to use it as a soapbox for myself.
Right.
Because I don't think that's right, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think that you would necessarily get good results from that anyway. It's interesting because Facebook groups kind of take on a life of their own once you create them. And although you're the mod, you know, I don't get a sense that most people even know that you are the mod. You know, I get the impression that most people see it as this public service that's just free and it's just happening, and they don't actually know about any of the work that goes behind it. I imagine it's a little bit of a thankless task. I mean, what is your, like, what's your, how do you feel about The Resource right now?
Yeah, it is. It can sometimes be a thankless task. Although I do have, like, a small selection of little cheerleaders that encourage me along the way. People who've been in The Resource from the beginning, who know how much work I put into it.
It's not, but you don't have any proper trolls. I mean, you don't have, as far as I haven't seen anyone getting aggressive or derogatory towards you or anyone else on the board. I think we see some fiery reactions when there are jobs posted with no salaries, or someone's looking for an unpaid internship that clearly requires the skills of a midweight creative or something like that. So people get quite reactionary within the threads, but it's not, it doesn't seem to be a home of trolls and flame wars.
No, generally people are really professional, and we do have a few that tend to take to anger quicker than others. And I, to some extent, have tried to mitigate this kind of aggression by controlling what posts come in, you know, creating stricter rules in terms of remuneration. And I do sometimes need to take it off the group and have a private discussion with people when they get a little out of hand. I have had people, you know, attack me in messages before.
Yeah.
But generally, I know that it's not because I've done something. They just get angry about certain things. And then, you know, when people feel passionately about it, things tend to get a little bit heated. And I can understand that. I just always try and keep everybody calm and try and step in when things get a bit crazy, and always try and to remind people that it's a professional platform, that your potential employers are watching.
Absolutely.
And that whatever you say on there can make an impression on them.
Yeah. You're publicly visible with your name and everything. Exactly. So I think that's a great, it's a great moderating factor that you won't find on something like Twitter, if you, where you might have an anonymous account. Over the last, you've been working on the resource for 5 years now. And in that time, is it 5 years exactly? How close?
It was July. So yeah, it's almost 5 years.
Okay, almost 5 years. And you've gotten to the nice round number of 15,000, which is good. And what I think from the perspective of building an audience, I think most creatives are interested in that, because it's all anyone talks about in terms of social media marketing and even building your own personal brand and fans and all that stuff. So what have been, did you kind of luck out? Did you plan this? What are your guidelines, if you will, for building a following of 15,000 people?
I kind of accidentally created this. I'm still surprised today that it happened, because the group has really started to solve a problem that I had seen happen. I was working as a permalancer at Brand Union, and at the time, the traffic manager, it was at a time when freelancing started really picking up and the kind of gig economy all of a sudden started exploding. And there wasn't really a good way for agencies and clients to get in touch with freelancers. And it ended up being this whole cold call thing, asking other freelancers for recommendations, and it just didn't seem very efficient. Also, it gets a bit annoying as a freelancer if you're constantly having people asking you for recommendations.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't seem very efficient. And I'm a very pragmatic person, and I always, you know, value efficiency. So we were sitting one night having office drinks after finishing work, and I was saying, I just wish there was a place where I could point all these people, you know, that they could find resources, freelance resources. And one of the client service girls who worked with me at the time, Kaylee, she was like, why don't you just do it and just call it the resource? So that evening I did, started the group, you know, found some graphics, uploaded it, and then just started sending people there. And through my network and my partner Andrea's network, it just grew. It just started.
So from
by word of mouth, from zero,
and
my small selection of freelance connections.
Right. So they started following, and then they brought more and more.
More and more and more. And then so it just snowballed. So I suppose the more connections you get, initially it was very centered around Cape Town, because my network is around Cape Town. And I just really started encouraging people from other cities to join and to start posting there. And as soon as it did, initially, it was just supposed to be for the advertising industry. Then more and more people wanted to join. It was initially only supposed to be freelancers. Then it became full-time. So it's grown a lot. I think this is where it's going to stop in terms of who we're going to include. And I'm quite firm with the type of jobs that come in. It's more technical. I want to try and keep it focused on commercial work. So I tend to exclude some occupations which are more focused on the general public, just because we mostly want agencies and serious clients who want the services of the people in the group.
But, how did agencies and employers start getting involved?
Also just word of mouth, I guess.
Someone told them, hey, this is a great place to find.
So a freelancer can now, previously if you were a freelancer and you didn't have any availability and somebody had come to you, you would refer them to another freelancer of yours. But it ends up becoming this whole round robin thing because you've always got people in your little referral network who are generally also at the same level as you. And when you're busy, they're usually also busy.
Yeah.
So then the client ends up running into a dead end. And so the resource, I think, became a place where you could just send them where they could get loads of people interested.
Yeah. Okay, we are back from a short break because my current home is next to a high school. And it turns out that high school students really like to scream. So we took a little break and now I think it's going to be a lot quieter. And when we left off, we were talking about building a following. You've got 15,000 followers now. And you said that it more or less, so you were talking about how it more or less happened naturally. It was your network, which then expanded into a larger network. And eventually employers and agencies started joining. And now it's become kind of snowballed, as you said.
Yeah.
Now, was that growth slow and steady? Or did it become exponential at a certain point? Was there a hockey stick, as they say, where it's nothing, 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 then suddenly a turning point in success? Or were there peaks and troughs? How did it, in terms of the numbers, how did it build?
It was actually pretty steady flow, and it was exponential up to a point. It did slow down the growth at some point because I started implementing stricter protocols to let people in. I just made a decision to try and keep the quality quite high. So I implemented rules like that people needed qualifications up to a certain level because I realized that there were so many institutions out there that aren't accredited, and then people come in and they don't know what they're doing. So we really want to get qualified professionals in touch with employers.
Sure. Okay, well, the kids are not done apparently. Okay, after another quick break, I want to pick up with the following question. As I was saying, the resource mostly focuses on creative professionals, and I imagine there's a large majority of people in advertising and marketing. You're talking designers, art directors, copywriters. How many other disciplines do you see in terms of production, post-production, traffic managers, project managers, that kind of thing?
There are some, not as many as probably writers, I think, would top out the most. And there's been a lot of influx of social media managers lately, SEO managers. We don't really see a hell of a lot of the kind of the support cast. Obviously, being a designer, I would call everybody else a support cast, which is really ridiculous. But all the people who make everything tick in an agency, there are some of them, not as many as the creative side. Again, this community grew out of my network, so
sure,
which are all creatives. So it would naturally be a little heavy on one side. Although we do have all sorts of people. There's been a big growth in administrative positions and requests for those lately.
But you're saying copywriters top out the most right now?
Yes, I think in terms of the ask, you know, what people are looking for the most, I think copywriting, because it covers so much in terms of it
so
covers content,
yeah.
You know, advertising work, script writing, you know, SEO also involves writing. PR involves a lot of writing. So there's, I think writers are quite a nice cross-industry
skill to have.
Skill.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely.
Whereas design seems to create a feeding frenzy. Every time a job comes up that's really great,
right,
you have like 100 people responding.
How many hours do you currently put into the resource every day?
I'd say probably on average about an hour. On days when I'm adding new members, I tend to spend more time because I really do seriously vet people. So for everybody who just goes and answers yes, 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 you know, they're not getting in.
Right.
Sorry to say. because, you know, I go on people's LinkedIn profiles, even if they don't provide me with information that is required, if they have given me some kind of vague answer and look like they've made some type of effort, I will try and see if I can find them online, find out more information. Because I really do want to have people who are legitimately qualified on the group, people who know what they're doing.
Sure.
Because the most annoying thing is that somebody would post the job there and then a whole bunch of unqualified people are there. Or, you know, unfortunately, people who are unqualified often also will just respond to everything.
Sure.
They'll just be like everything man and they'll...
Which dilutes it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it becomes more admin for the person posting and then they stop doing that because they don't want to be
going through the hassle. Yeah, they'll go and ask for a personal recommendation and go back to that word of mouth scenario.
Which is, you know, I'd have to find a way to try and prevent that from happening. So there's definitely something's going to have to give at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So as well as running the resource, you also have your own small design agency, Frolic. So how do you balance the resource and Frolic? Do you set aside a certain amount of time for the resource, which you get done in a certain time, or do you just on an ad hoc basis, oh, there's a request coming in, do you multitask? Because I'm very interested in the cost of task switching and how checking your email in the middle of a project takes you out of the flow and, you know, can screw up your whole day in terms of productivity. How do you manage those two sides?
I do struggle sometimes with getting distracted with various tasks. So I have to very actively force myself to sit down and focus on something. So a friend of mine recently told me about this method that some study, I don't know, he gave me the name of the doctor who studied this or the university or something, worked out this kind of productivity ratio, which I've been implementing lately and I find that it works really well. It's called 50-20-50.
Okay.
So the idea is that you block out your productivity on a specific task for 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. You turn off your phone, turn off all notifications for all the websites, close your internet browser. It has to be really no distraction. If your phone rings, you don't answer it. If you get a text, you don't look.
Yep.
Literally just sit and focus for 50 minutes. Mm-hmm. Set a timer on. They even recommend that you set a timer on a different device than your phone so that you don't get sucked into, ooh, there's a little icon, badge, notification.
You want to check the remaining time and then you see notification. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So like they say like a egg timer or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you sit and focus specifically on one task. You can even have like a little notepad next to you. If something does pop into your head because you're not a robot, then you can just write down,
yeah,
I remember to call Peter or whatever. And then once the timer goes off, you have a break for 20 minutes and you have to step away from your computer. You have to be completely away from your computer, do something else, go have a coffee, walk around, call a friend, scream into a pillow, whatever you need to do for 20 minutes, also timed, and then you do another block of 50 minutes. So that altogether rounds up 2 hours. So if you just keep repeating that during the day, the idea is that you'd be more productive and more focused. And I've heard that this really works well for developers.
Yeah.
So it might be something that people want to try. So I try and do that as much as I can. Try and block out time for the resource. That's why people sometimes will notice that there'll be a bit of
a
surge of posts coming through and then sometimes when nothing.
So for those of people who on the group are looking for work, when should they kind of be hanging around on the resource if they want to be one of those first commenters? What's the optimal time to be stalking posts?
First thing in the morning is always good to...
First thing in the morning is different for designers.
Okay, well, first... Okay,
9 a.m.?
12. No, kidding. So I usually start getting all the stuff ready about 8:30.
Okay.
In the morning. So between 8:30 and 9:30, that's when most of the action happens. So if people are posting jobs, that would be a good time to have them all submitted. Mm-hmm. And then there'll usually be like a midday where I'll just check in.
Yeah.
Do some, because the approving post doesn't take me very long.
Sure.
And then I usually only do approvals of new members once a week because that's usually a big chunk of my time. Mm-hmm. So I try not to distract myself with it in between. So on Mondays. So get in before Monday.
Okay, early Mondays. So yeah, get up early. How many people are you approving on average a week? Obviously that it must have plateaued slightly as you've, I think, 15,000.
No, people. There's loads of people that want to join the group. Okay. I decline a hell of a lot because people aren't answering questions properly, so I can't vet them, despite the fact that I very clearly say what I need, what information I need. Or they just simply don't answer the entry questions, in which case I can't. You know, if you can't engage with just three basic questions, it's like a little test.
Yeah, what is the test exactly? I've done it. I just can't remember.
So it's just three questions. I just ask them if they live in Cape Town, in South Africa, because it's specifically for the South African industry. Sure. And you don't have to live in South Africa to be on the group. A lot of foreign people look for talent in South Africa, which is also fine. Then I ask people to give me detail on their qualifications and or experience. I need to know which institution, what level of qualification it is, because I feel it has to be accredited. Otherwise, there's so many people that come through from that have studied at Shaw Academy, which I think is a waste of money because they're just scamming people out of their savings with qualifications that aren't valid.
Right.
And then I ask people why they've joined the group.
Yeah.
And it's really just like a little taste of people's comprehension for me as well, because it's a very easy three questions. And if you can't answer that, then I do question how.
Yeah, exactly. And it's amazing how many people, what percentage you might have to filter out just based on those three simple questions, you know?
And 90% of the people that do answer the questions are great. They give me plenty of information, or they give me exactly what I need. And I can easily add them to the group. I do decline a lot. So I'd say probably every week I get about, I'd say 200 to 300 requests for the group. Then probably about 100 or so of those would get through.
So Frolic is mostly a product packaging design specialist studio, right? I mean, that's where your strength is.
Yeah.
And who are your kind of clients? I want to get a bit into the nitty gritty of how you work creatively. And because I think there's two sides to this interview, with the first half being the resource and the second half being you're literally one of the creative freelancers that you know, we want to talk to. So what do you focus on?
Yeah, I mostly focus on branding and identity and packaging. But I generally tend to get a client through potentially a packaging job, and then I'll end up doing everything for them.
Sure.
So I've got a few clients like that. So I do really a little bit of everything. Just like most designers, we have our bread and butter work, and then we've got the work in our portfolio, which is the work, more of the kind of work that we would like to do, you know, the stuff that really makes us excited. So packaging really excites me. And I specifically love packaging for luxury products like alcohol and cosmetics and luxury food and that kind of thing. Just because I'm a sucker for print, and they generally have more budget for the fun stuff like embossing and foils and beautiful papers.
Yeah.
And layering and all those beautiful things that us designers like to faff with, you know.
Sure. Where did you study?
At AAA.
Okay. And what year?
I graduated in 2005.
Okay.
It's been an age.
Okay, so you
this
were
year
actually
is my 20-year school reunion. It's
great. Oh, okay. I just kind of went through that. So you're a year behind me then. Yeah. I think I did graduate at AAA in 2002 or something like that. So a little bit behind. And you were in the design stream. Yeah. And did you go freelance initially, or did you go through the whole standard full-time employment?
Yeah.
Went crazy, decided to leave. What's your story there?
I'm a very cautious person. If I talk to a financial advisor, I'd go moderate all the way, moderate risk. I'm not somebody who risks things. I like to be prepared. Mm-hmm. So I did go, I did do a tiny little freelance stint at FCB because I did my internship during college with them.
Right.
And they asked me to come back for a little freelance stint. And it just kind of went month to month. I think it ended up being about 6 months. They ended up making a BE appointment instead of hiring me, which in hindsight, I'm actually grateful for, because I realized that small design studios are really my jam.
Sure.
Oh, that's so uncool. My jam. More my atmosphere, my feeling.
Yeah, I hope that people listening to this are going to be just aware that they're going to hear the word rad a lot.
Oh, I love the word rad. I'm such an old school dork. I love.
I suspect that the resource's average age is in 30-ish area, maybe a little bit older.
I'd have to go look at the age statistics, but yeah, I think it is about 28 to 40, if I can remember correctly.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It does taper out a lot when you get to the over 40s, which does concern me because it's not too far off for me.
Yeah. And what exactly happens to those people at that point?
You know? Where do they go? Do they like move to the country and start making cheese?
I'm turning 40 this year and I'm moving to Melkbosstrand. So, you know, apparently, yes. I'm not planning on any cheese making. But I think it's another thing that we will definitely cover is going freelance after 40 or being a creative in an industry that's extremely youth-centric after 40. Because I saw the struggles on the resource. I saw a few people who were struggling to find work at that age.
Yeah.
And since I'm heading in that direction, you know, I was very aware of it. And I was thinking, you know, you've got to change gears or change tactics or something's got to change before 40 or I'll end up being that copywriter who, you know, says things like, I really just like writing by hand. I'm not a fan of social media and digital. Oh. I like to do that old school stuff and I'm trying to find small clients. You know. And getting there are people who can do that. Yeah. There are people who can do that. But the reality is that, you know, the industries change and they adapt and you have to adapt with them.
And so quickly too.
Have you had to kind of change your approach to design or technology or how you work in a way that, because you felt like you were, losing relevance?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, imposter syndrome is alive and well in most designers. So we always feel like we, you know, losing touch with the way things are going. And especially when you see all these young graduates coming out.
Visual design must be even so more talented. Difficult for that.
Oh, it is. It is because you also, the clients start targeting a different age group because it's always like, you know, you want that golden target market. We have all the young and cool kids. Yeah. And
they're just finally starting to stop talking about millennials and starting to talk about Gen Z. I'm so happy to have the focus taken off millennials.
It's so difficult because now when you're not in that age group anymore, yes, of course, it's part of our job to be able to communicate to a vast, range of age groups. But, you know, you do kind of tend to feel like you lose touch a bit. Like, I hate TikTok.
And right. I was going to say, that's the classic.
Like, we were talking about it the other day.
Yeah.
Really hate TikTok.
Yeah.
And that is the way people communicate, apparently, or starting to. I suppose I hate it because it's a lot like Twitter, and I really also hate Twitter. I'm really sorry. It's hate Twitter.
A little bit video Twitter, I guess.
Yeah. It's too, I mean, I'm a visual person, but I prefer well-crafted, beautiful imagery. So I've always loved Instagram because I feel brands put more effort into that. And when I put myself out there, and apart from my personal profile, which, I mean, I'm not a selfie person, so I don't like do it all up to make myself look good. Mm-hmm. But in terms of my work stuff and how I display that, I try and do it the best possible way.
Which is amazing, because when I was doing research for this, I went obviously to Frolic's website, and your packaging photography that you do is incredible. How do you do it yourself? Do you have a light box at home? How do you get bottles shot specifically?
They are mostly not photographs.
Oh, really? Are they renders? Yes.
I do have some shots that have been shot by a professional photographer in a studio and lit and retouched by a retoucher. Sometimes I'll do my own retouching, but most of them are mock-up templates, which are essentially renders that you could edit.
Yeah.
The issue that I have is that a lot of my clients are overseas and a lot of them are quite small clients. And so it's really costly to send packaging over or items take a long time to get to market. So I don't often get samples quickly. And obviously we'd like to get the work out there as quickly as possible.
Sure. But alcohol brands do that a lot. They use 3D renders in TV ads now,
yes,
more than they do.
Definitely.
Product photography, especially in terms of bottles pouring, the condensation on the glass and all that, it's an art, which I think eventually someone figured out that the 3D rendering to replace that, and companies jumped at it.
Well, you can do rendering like from scratch, which you get lots of talented people who have renders, who do renders like that, but it can tend to get expensive. So what I do is I usually trawl the internet. I've got a really long list of sources where I find pre-made templates. Then I'd usually edit them, add my artwork, and then retouch them afterwards to make them look as good as I possibly can make them. And that sometimes acts as a placeholder until I can actually get physical stock and then shoot it. Otherwise, if it looks good, then I don't.
Sure.
Sometimes I'll combine the two. I'll use stock imagery and then a shot that was taken by a photographer, just a straight-on shot. Like, say, what alcohol producers will sometimes do for catalogs. So they'll just shoot a catalog shot.
Mm.
And it's a nice bottle shot, but it's not anything smart. Then I'll do comps sometimes where I find similar packaging, and then I'll comp the physical label onto a nicely shot and then edit it from there. Right. You know, like make, like you would comp something together for a photo shoot.
Absolutely.
So, you know, to kind of just create a scene and give people a sense of what the product is.
And and show it in its best light.
Yeah. And it's cheap because I'm only using my time.
Yes.
And not paying somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather save my money for European travels.
Right.
Yeah.
So also, I mean, there's a practical, when it comes to bottles, especially and drinks, there's a practical element in that. If it's a catalog situation where there's multiple wines in the same brand or whatever it might be, photographers tend to either shoot them straight on or from a slight elevation or from some kind of slight angle, which when you put them all together into a single thing, it looks like madness.
Yeah.
So to have a template that you can just place that on top of gives that uniformity.
It's so great. Photoshop has become so fantastic these days. You get smart objects, which are really clever, where really talented people go and they'll do all the complex wrapping of the labels around the artwork. And literally all you have to do is double click and drop in your artwork, do a little bit of tweaking afterwards to make it look nice, like adding finishes to your label. But a lot of the heavy lifting has already been done. So you can just be creative with it. No. You can then go, instead of having to worry about all the technical bits of getting a label to wrap around or getting all the shading right, somebody else has thought of that for you, and you can just put the design, because that's not necessarily, as a print designer, your skill
to be
able to do 3D. I mean, I have done 3D renders for clients before. I know how to wrap things, but it just takes so much time.
Everyone does know how to do that, but what's,
You know, you just want access to things that can do things for you quickly.
Yeah. I think that's also a key element of freelancing, is finding efficiencies.
Yes.
And I think, you know, I'm only kind of starting this journey. I've been freelancing. This is the third time I've been freelancing. I've been doing it for 8 months now. And I'm not a big tool user, in terms of I don't use a lot of time tracking apps and project management apps like Trello or Asana or anything like that. But I imagine in the visual arts, you'll see more use of shortcut apps and tools and tricks, especially in Photoshop, for that kind of thing, because your time is money.
Yeah.
If you're selling your time, then rendering something, unless you're offering rendering and you want to get really good at it, rather just shortcut that process.
Mm.
So
you need to work smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are a couple of resources people can, where they can find a smart object for doing label designs or any kind of templates? Will you recommend anything?
Well, mock-up templates, these days you can just Google and you'll find tons. I like to go onto Pinterest because there's often people who pin a lot of really great mock-up resources
board that you
and then
can
you manage. Generally get into that design rabbit hole where you're just like,
so do you search bottle mock-up?
You know, yes.
Okay.
Like PSD wine mock-up. And I often go into Google Images and then I'll just go through the Google Images. A lot of them, the good ones are paid ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you, I usually really think about what I have money to invest in and what I would use a lot. I also use it in my presentations to clients.
Mm.
So I won't necessarily go into the whole scene or everything, but I always mock up my labels onto a real bottle so that the client can get a feel for what it would look like.
Sure.
And, you know, so I invest in good templates for those. So I like using Yellow Images is a great one because they've just got really, really slick mockup templates. Mm-hmm. They are probably the most expensive. And their mockups are really simple. So they won't have a scene. It'll just be an object. But right. they'll have the biggest collection of objects. So if you're looking for something weird, like a very specific Tupperware container, then they'll probably have it. There's a good chance. Okay.
So it's any products.
Yes. Okay. So if that's for premium, that and Creative Market, probably. For free stuff, I always hit Graphic Burger. They've just got loads of free stuff, not just mockup templates. They've got all sorts of other useful resources and all free. So mm-hmm. It's really great. I like you going there for that.
Right. And are you working off Adobe Creative Suite on a MacBook? Is that your, I mean, I think that's a very standard setup for a lot of creators.
Yeah, yeah. It's just recently gotten really expensive because I've exhausted all my discount yearly subscriptions on that CC.
Right.
Which is a lot, what a lot of people struggle with. But yes, that, and I've also got an iPad Pro okay. with Apple Pencil that I use for sketching.
Sure.
Which makes it a lot easier to do.
Yeah. Just ignore the children. I'm hoping that people listening to this, I'm going to try and noise gate
we
them
love
out.
Children.
I'm going to try and filter them out. But it seems to be some kind of, we've chosen a day to do the interview where they're having some kind of rally or something. I don't know what is going on. Anyway.
It's the end of the world.
Okay. So you've got a, are there any other, apps that you use? Are you using Procreate on the iPad Pro?
Yes, or? Procreate, but I also really like Fresco, which mm-hmm. is Adobe's new kind of iPad
drawing tool, right.
which I find is really simple and easy, and it's got a lot of the stuff that I like to use. Mm-hmm. I also use Affinity on iPad, just because it's like having a full Illustrator InDesign-esque app on an iPad. It does take a bit of like getting used to because it's very different to the Adobe programs mm-hmm. kind of tools and stuff. But it does allow me to edit layered Illustrator documents on iPad. It also has like a raster layer combination. So it's weird. It's almost like Photoshop and Illustrator and InDesign all okay. combined.
Right.
So you can do vector and raster stuff in the same document, which
that's cool.
You can't really do on any of the Adobe apps.
Sure. Speaking as a writer, I know the edges of what you're talking about, but yeah. not the details. Yeah.
Yeah. There's lots of like technical stuff, and there's like people that are way more skilled at using these programs than I am. I think Illustrator's really going to the deep, deep depths of these drawing apps. I really just tinker a little bit. Illustration only forms small part of what I do.
Sure.
So I haven't really delved into that as much, but I like to play around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you said in terms of time tracking and management, you were using an app called Paymo?
Yes. A while back, I just realized that I needed something more consistent to track my time with. I used to use a little separate free tracker, and then I'd do something which I think a lot of designers do that's really dumb, and I'm going to tell everyone now, stop doing it. I was creating all my invoices in Illustrator because I was so
wow.
particular about how I wanted them to be pretty. Just mm-hmm. just let that go. I'm going to tell all the people who start freelancing right now, just let it go. Just yeah. don't. Just invoices look ugly. Just deal with it. Just move on.
Yeah.
So I decided that I needed something that was more integrated. And so I checked out literally every single platform that's out there. I tried Monday, I tried Asana, I tried all of them. And either they were too complicated, there was too steep a learning curve, or it was more geared to teams rather mm-hmm. than individual.
Yeah, very enterprise focused.
They had lots of like bulky things that were included that I didn't need, and that made it expensive. And then I tried Paymo, and within a couple of weeks of using the free version, I was sold and I went to the premium version. It's just a really great, simple app that is fantastic for a single person, a solopreneur, or if you're working in a small team, it also works great. The thing is just that it does scale down to a single person,
right.
which is really fantastic. And you can track your time very efficiently, assign all your specific time increments to specific tasks within projects, and then invoice directly from those timesheets.
Right.
Just by like one click of a button. It's just so easy. You load all your clients in there, and it also tracks how you spend your time, how many hours in a month of your billable hours you've spent. So it very quickly tells you if you're not being efficient.
Wow. So you really get the data.
Yeah. Which... it's like a proper kick up the butt.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm terrified of doing that.
Yeah. It is terrifying, especially since, you know, I don't, if you're a freelancer, your day does incorporate some admin and you, it's, I think, unrealistic unless you're working outside of a 9-to-5 to think that you can have 8 billable hours a day.
Sure.
Because there's so much admin involved.
Yeah.
So it's quite frightening to see all those hours you're missing. So it really motivates you when you get that like real look.
Sure.
To really be more productive and start working out things to be more productive and trying to cut out the things that really distract you.
Yeah.
Also, there's another app that kind of leads from that. Which is called, which somebody from the Resource Creator Forum actually told me about. It's called Station, which is fantastic. It's a little dock app for all your web apps in one place.
Okay.
So you download it natively on your computer, but then you basically log into all these web apps like Facebook, and I've logged into Paymo from there. I've got my Wix. Don't judge me. I've got a Wix website.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I've got my Wix admin page on there. I've got basically everything that can distract me, and you can mute them all together.
Okay.
Which is fantastic. Okay. So you don't have to have a browser open, which is like a rabbit hole.
WhatsApp desktop?
Sorry?
WhatsApp desktop version?
Yes, I put that on there too. Okay. You can,
because that's a big thing.
Anything that is web-based, you can put on there. So whatever you like.
And you say it's called Station.
I've got my Gmail, I've got everything on there. Yeah. Station, yes.
Is it, I mean, I'm sure you can Google it. Is it station.com? I imagine that's quite a hard
URL
to get.
I'm sure you should be able to find Station app here, probably. And also recently I switched away from using Chrome because I found that the loading times were really slow and it was giving me lots of hassles, slowing down my machine. So again, somebody from the Resource Forum recommended that I switch to Brave, which is a different browser.
Brave. Okay. Yeah.
And the great thing about it is that it blocks all the trackers. So you don't have anybody watching what you're Googling, using it to sell products. So it's fantastic. Yeah. And you can actually see how far reaching the Facebook trackers are. It is insane.
Yeah.
So I've liked kind of using Brave and not feeling like I'm being spied on 24/7.
Yeah.
Except I wish I could protect my phone from.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it's listening to me right now.
Yeah. We tried that. We my wife and I tried on a road trip to talk about Mauritius for like 20 minutes, and then we wanted to see if any ads for Mauritius came up, but they didn't. But I feel like it's smart enough that if it hears it more than 20 times in a couple of minutes, then it kind of goes, it's trying to trick you. Yeah.
No, it happened to me the other day. I do ceramics. So I was doing my little clay session, and I was sitting talking to the girl who runs the studio, Tash, and saying, I feel so guilty about bringing a coffee cup into the studio because I know that she's really intense about recycling.
Right.
And that it's so cumbersome having these reusable cups. And I've got like 4 of them, but they're all over the place and they're never in my car when I go for a takeout coffee. So it's not very practical. And lo and behold, 2 days later, I get a Kickstarter campaign on repeat on my Facebook feed for a collapsible coffee cup.
Yes, I've seen it too, actually. They must be buying a bunch of media or something.
When is a coincidence and when is your phone spying?
Yeah. Obviously, there are psychological reasons why we associate things. We're seeing them anyway, and then suddenly we're thinking about it. But I do secretly suspect, you know, I suspect that it's not that they're listening. Obviously, they're listening a lot more than we know.
I think Gmail spies on you.
Yeah. It's funny enough, it's those things that are taking information because they're subtler than, you know, a Facebook farming game that tells you that it's going to take your friends list so it can, you know, build an audience or whatever it might be. Whereas something like Gmail it's taking a whole lot of data from you that you don't even know, you know, that you can't even, because they can find, get data from you in ways you can't even imagine. You know?
No, it's, I mean, I'm sure they scrape your emails for keywords and then just advertise based on what you're saying.
Yeah, as long as it's anonymized and all that kind of, and even then you don't know.
It's crazy.
It's an interesting thing, you know, talking with friends recently. I think a lot of my friends are in a point where it's not necessarily midlife crisis, but it is, okay, we're hitting 40. It's time to, for those of us who are fully employed, they want to start something on the side. You know, they or their partner might be wanting to spend more time with the kids and pull back from full-time employment. So there's a lot of talk about starting businesses and entrepreneurship and all that kind of thing. And one of the key questions that we come to when we're talking about these things is, what is the data angle? Like, if you're starting a company that sells cupcakes, how can you get, obviously you've got a mailing list, which then you can use to, you know, send newsletters or promos, or whatever it might be. But beyond that, obviously cupcakes is a bad idea, but it's a bad example, but let's say not. Let's say you're collecting data on what cupcakes sell the most at certain times so that you can, you know, prepare the right cupcakes at the right time to reduce wastage. And that's not even invading. That's not even getting near people's privacy. Massive digression alert. Massive digression alert. Today that you are entering an industry award in terms of wine label design. And that who tell me more about that?
That the award is, it's a small award. They generally only have about 120 people at the awards ceremony every year. It's very specific to the wine and spirits industry. So it's run by Wine Mag, and they have now recently added spirits as part of the category. So it used to be always wine, just wine. Then they added beer last year, which is the first time I entered. And then there's spirits this year. And last year I walked away with two bronzes. This year I'm hoping to get more than a bronze. We'll see. I've entered two things.
Okay.
So a wine and a spirit. So fingers crossed something happens and I don't embarrass myself.
You said it was Juniper Gin, right?
Juniper Moon Gin. And the other one is a wine called Kings River Wines from Robertson Winery.
Okay. So people will see those in your standard kind of liquor store?
The Kings River wines, I think they're only for export. I'm not sure if you can get them locally. Mm-hmm. You might. Juniper Moon you can actually get from Yuppie Chef and Take a Lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
To round it off, I and all of the members of the resource are, although we might not be thinking about it, when we do think about it, I'm sure we're all very thankful for the work that you do and the years of work that you put into the resource. And, you know, you've been behind hundreds and possibly thousands of people connecting with clients, making money and making freelancing in South Africa a doable thing, because without that infrastructure of being able to communicate with possible clients, I think it'd be a lot more difficult. I think, you know, obviously it's not the only channel for people to find work, and there's still a lot of word of mouth, but I think it is a very efficient channel and a very well-managed one. So, so wish you the best of luck with the rest of the year and developing the resource onto whatever the next step is. I think this year will be a big year for you. I think that at 15K is a nice round number to now, you know, leap into whatever the next thing is.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope there's some exciting things to come. Mm. And the one thing I'd like to finish off with is that the resource happened purely because I had an idea and I followed through with it. And it was a very simple idea. And I'd like to tell anybody that if you spot something and you think that there is a gap there and somebody should be dealing with it or creating a product for it or solving that problem, sometimes a really simple idea can make a big impact, and you don't know if it will unless you do it. So sure. Just do it.
Yeah. It's a tough one, because something like, you know, when you started the resource, I think that there was a good, you know, conflux of a good idea at a good time with a good technology that was available to deal with it.
But also like perseverance.
Yeah, that's the thing though, is that you can start something, but it's the follow through.
Slow and steady wins the race.
And what do you think? I think the key issue there is, how do you know when it's going to work? And how do you know when actually you're putting your long-term effort into something that's not going to work? What was the point with the resource when you thought, okay, this is actually this is happening? How long should you give yourself before you go, oh, you know what, this is a waste of my time?
Oh, I don't have that answer.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah.
You know,
it's probably case by case. You have to know it, feel it for yourself. You know?
And I mean, yes, the resource is working for everyone. Not sure it's working for me yet.
Right.
It will, but I'm, you know, it's a baby that I'm nurturing, and hopefully one day it'll return.
Go out, get a degree, earn some cash, take care of you and your old age.
Put me in retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thanklessly never visit you.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think there is a clear cut answer for that. I think you just have to decide what is right for you, essentially. Mm. And if it's going the way you need it to go.
Mm.
Or if it's contributing in some meaningful way. I mean, I think that's the case with the resource. But I feel like people appreciate it and need it and find it useful, and it is doing something good for the industry. So it's worth carrying on with that.
Yeah. Stay tuned. Cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Wow, they're really loud right now.
I'm really hoping the mics aren't picking it up. But just for context here, I'm going to open the window and hold the mic out, and we can all have a listen as to what's going on.
We're feeling the geest.
Yeah.